Welcome to Closer to Venus. I'm Johnny Burke. Today's guest is Pamela Aloya. She is an energy healer, author, spiritual coach, and teacher. Her work helps clients understand how they're affected by energy and how to clear emotional and mental clutter. Today, we'll be talking about her experiences meeting people from the other side, connecting with past lives, and working with angels. Pamela, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here, Johnny.
Excellent. So I'm thinking that when I look at energy healer, author, spiritual coach, and all of your experience, the energy healing, did that experience come first or was there something else before that?
It was the energy healing, at least that I remember consciously. I was having a lot of physical issues. And while I was receiving some feedback and some help from traditional medicine with medication and things like that, it wasn't enough. I found that when I went to some of the alternative therapies, that energy work was the best thing that gave me about 75% of relief from my symptoms, and I was able to go off some medication from it. So once I realized that energy healing was a thing and it was real, that I really just jumped into it with both feet and figured, okay, I got to learn as much as I possibly can about this and share it with as many people who are open to it.
And it seems, at least from my experience, that the energy healing seems to be like a starting point for many of an intuitive path. Do you find the same thing?
Yeah, it is definitely a common occurrence to get people onto a different way of thinking about things and viewing things. I think a lot of folks that I speak to start to realize that they are looking at things so linearly and so 3D-ish that we're so ingrained on getting the symptoms of our physical issues resolved when we don't always realize that our physical issues could be associated with emotional issues or mental issues or constructs that we've either been ignoring or have been programmed within us that we don't even realize that they're there.
And can we assume that your entry into the world of energy healing and everything that comes with that, is that how you discovered past lives and spirit guides and things like that?
It is. Through deep meditation, I learned that meditation got me through some of my discomfort physically with some of the symptoms that I had been having. And it also brought me to an inner awareness about myself and then about guides, angels, and those who have passed and everything else that goes along with that.
And it's quite a vast universe, if that's even the right term. It's probably more like a galaxy or several galaxies. I know a lot of us are still trying to figure that out. So what really comes first? We have past lives, angels, spirit guides, and other types of beings. Did this kind of all hit you all at once, or was it little by little?
With the meditation, I found that I was able to understand more about angels and guides. Now, I grew up Catholic, so I always believed that we had guardian angels with us anyhow. I just assumed they were with us, but never really did anything to try and feel them other than pray. So the more I did the meditation, though, I felt like I could open up doorways that I hadn't opened up before. So I was aware of different changes in energy and started to do some conscious meditations to learn who my guides were, learn who my angels were, and connecting with other spiritual beings too. So I would say that probably came first. And then the next thing that happened for me was connecting with past loved ones. And that was sort of by accident for me. The first relative of mine who I would say she connected with me because it was my grandmother. I had, I guess, received some of her furniture and had it in my home, and it was just in one room in the home. And after a while of having it in the home, I would go into that room and I would feel her. When you have furniture or heirlooms or things like that, you're going to feel the person's energy. That's part of the reason why you take it, is because you want to feel and stay close to that person. But this was more than that. I actually started avoiding that room because I knew she was there. I had a feeling she was there. And growing up, this wasn't something we talked about. I didn't think I was going crazy. I knew what I knew, but I didn't know who to talk to about it so that I could feel more secure in it. And finally, one day, I was outside doing some yard work. And this is months gone by now. Months gone by, I know my grandmother's there. I know she wants to talk to me, and I just keep avoiding the situation. So I'm doing some yard work, and I'm taking a break, and I feel my uncle who's also passed. He's never come through to me before or since, by the way. He came in and he said, clear as day, you know, someone wants to talk to you. And I said, yes. Yes, I know. And he said, but I'm not sure I want to talk to her. And she said,
were you scared? Or
I wasn't scared at all. There was no fear whatsoever. I knew he was coming from a loving place. And I think it was time. I had ignored it long enough. I said, finally, okay, I'll make some time later on today and I'll sit with her. And I did. And then that kind of opened the doors for other folks to come through, people I knew, people I didn't know.
Now, when you commune, I guess is the right word, with people that have passed over, what kind of insights come at you right away? Are they happy? Are they sad? Does it vary? I've heard lots of different accounts on that.
Yeah, to me, it varies and also varies on how long the person, and that's not always true either. So it depends on how the person is transitioning to the other side. Sometimes it depends on how long they've been over there too. Initially, some folks take a little bit of time. Some folks take a very long time to transition. I had a mentor of mine whose husband had died, and she claimed it took him 20 years to come to her and accept that she was trying to connect with him for all of those 20 years. But he had lived a life that he was ashamed of, and he came to her 20 years later and said, you know, all the work that you've done, the forgiveness work, the love you've sent me, has definitely helped me grow on the other side. And then I've talked to people who come to me and ask to connect with somebody who's passed. Some people just want to know their, again, sometimes depending on how quickly it's been, some folks are still transitioning and finding it interesting, exploring what it is to be on the other side. And others are just totally, whoa, this is great. We love it. You know, don't call us too many times. You know,
don't call us.
We're having fun.
I've heard that other mediums have told me that when a person passes initially, it takes them time to learn how to communicate with living people that are still here on Earth. And speaking of mediums, I noticed that you don't use that term, even though by definition you are a medium, because if you can talk to the dead, that's how it's usually described. Do you consciously avoid that label, or?
I may consciously avoid that. I think part of that is because to me, people who have crossed over and being able to connect with those folks as well as spiritual beings, to me, it's all the same. It's a different vibration if you can tap into the different levels of vibration. So to me, it's more than mediumship. I don't really segregate the two. I could. I will admit, secondarily, I think part of the mediumship to me is growing up. Again, this was not something that you talked about very often. And if someone was a medium, they were automatically kind of pushed aside, you know, dismissed. So I think part of that is in there too, if I'm honest.
As a young person, were you able to see spirits and have psychic phenomena, psychic experiences at all?
Not that I recall.
Okay.
Not that I recall, no. The closest I feel that I've gotten to a spiritual experience as a young person was in second grade when I really started to have a fabulous relationship with Mother Mary growing up Catholic. I don't recall anything specific. I do remember being completely enamored with the apparitions with Lourdes and Fatima, and really was sucked into that story for years. I still am. I think it's a fascinating story, all the times that she's appeared places.
So on the subject of angels and guides, for one thing, I think some folks do kind of get them confused. Can you give us some clarity on that, if it's possible? They are different, and I've been told that angels have never been on Earth, whereas guides are usually people that have lived here and then passed on.
And that is my understanding, too. So the angels, again, is a different vibration. The angels vibrate at, I would say, a higher vibration, although they can lower themselves depending on where we can meet them in between. The angels bring a much more loftier, but they can be quite humorous at the same time and practical, you know, kind of call you out on your own stuff in
really?
A humorous way. Yeah.
It's not the first time I've heard that either. It isn't. Actually, I think it's kind of funny. It's good to know.
It is. It is. It's fun. It's fun because you can feel the love behind it. There's no judgment. There's love and you can have fun with it. Even though you're screwing up or you feel like you're screwing up, there's just endless love. So that's lovely. And guides can be folks who have been here in the past. They could be from your lineage. They could be Indians. They could be Eskimos. You know, it could be other people. But you can also have guides that are animal guides as well. Not necessarily have walked the earth, but say we have a guide that's a bear, that to me they encompass the whole bear energy of all bears that have ever lived, just the essence of what a bear is. I have seen people who have guides who are like dragons or fairies or things like that. So it's not just related to earthly type things.
Dragons, as in like Game of Thrones, like those kind of dragons?
I've seen dragons, yes. I've seen water dragons, air dragons, fire dragons. It really depends on the person. And all guides are great. All guides are great. It's more what meets the person's personality or the information and essence of what they need at that time.
So do you think it's true that we create the vision of our guides, or do they somehow read our minds and just manifest themselves in a way that is best for the individual?
I would say the latter. I hadn't given it much thought, quite honestly, but the way I understand it is that we have, for lack of a better word, a team of light, and the team of light can be angels and guides put together if we're going to simplify it. Based on what it is that we need at that time, I believe there are some guides who stay with us throughout our whole lifetime, and there are other guides that kind of switch
cars. Come in and out.
Mm-hmm. Based on what we're going through. So in that regard, I do believe that those folks will come in based on what we're resonant with so that we can receive the messages.
So now that we've got a pretty good explanation on that, can you tell us how you actually work with angels and guides with your clients?
I believe that when I work with clients, we are working with both of our angels and guides to get the clarity, the healing, the information, whatever it is that the person is there for, together, and getting it in the most concise, accurate manner for them to receive. So I don't believe that it's me working with the client. I feel like we're bringing in the whole team of light and saying, okay, what does this person need based on their intention? We set the tone, we call them in from the very beginning. And a lot of times the angels or guides will bring verbal messages. They'll bring in emotional calm or information to the client that I may not even be aware of. They can bring in different colors of light, geometries, whatever it is that they need, they bring it in. I really believe that we probably only are aware of, say, 30% of what they're providing for us. And the other 70% would be things that we either can't sense, don't need to know.
So how did you come up with the 30-70 distribution? Is that just a guess or just a gut feeling? Or
This is the first time I came across it, because I know that there's a lot of times when, even in meditations, if we're clearing ourselves, because we all have patterns. So if we take some time to clear a pattern, it could take weeks, months, years, depending on how ingrained that pattern is to us. There's times when we have to let go of any other, how do I say this? There's certain agreements we may have made to have this pattern in our lifetime so we could learn from it, or we could learn to let it go. In doing that, my experience has always been, we don't need to know everything. So sometimes we can just let that go, as long as we're intending to let go something that doesn't serve us anymore. Because as humans, we tend to overanalyze everything, and the more information we have, sometimes it's worse for us. So I think 30 to 50%, we don't know what's going on. We're just letting it go energetically.
And we may not need to know those things.
No.
You mentioned agreements. This definitely does conjure images or thoughts of the in-between space, life between lives, in-between incarnations. In your experience or with your clients, have you actually experienced that space?
Yes, definitely both with myself as well as with my clients in the past life regression therapy sessions we do. And I find it fascinating because it helps us understand some of the trials and tribulations we're doing here. Some of the agreements we make are not always spiritual. So let's say, for instance, in a past life regression session, if we were dying in a past life and say, we were dying because we were being hanged because we stole something, but we didn't steal anything. We were wrongfully accused by our friends. And we said to ourselves, we're never trusting a soul again in our lives before we gave our last breath. So when we come into this lifetime, we're all of a sudden the most distrusting person in the world. We don't think that anybody can love us. We don't think that anybody's treating us correctly because we know they're going to betray us at some point in time. So these sort of agreements are things that are not helpful for us. It could be a lesson for us, but sometimes we bring that on ourselves based on a prior experience.
One of the questions I've always had, because I've had quite a few people talk about past lives and the in-between space, and invariably what comes up is that it's like almost casting a movie, how they make the agreements. They basically take on a role. So is it even possible to differentiate between someone who's playing a role and someone who's just being just a lousy, a poor human being, free will? Is there a way to actually do that, or is that something we'll just never know?
So are you saying in our lifetime here, can we tell if, say, your brother is playing a role versus your cousin playing just a not so nice guy?
Actually, no. It's a tricky question. Let me rephrase. You have some experiences here in this lifetime which are not great. There's a mix that there's good and there's bad. You get to the in-between space and you talk to guides or whoever is there. Do you discover there what roles the soul family, the members had? And if someone was supposed to give you a hard time as opposed to somebody who was not playing a role and was just a mean person, murderer, thief, or whatever. Is there a way to really figure that out, or do we even need to know?
In my experience, most of the times that we get to that space where we're talking about who played what role, that is really all we talk about because those were the most important ones. If we weren't learning that lesson, then everything else was kind of superfluous and not necessary to know. So I think it's something we would worry about after the fact. If we're getting the main gist of what that lifetime was presenting for us, then that's sufficient. But I appreciate the question because now in my next sessions, I'm going to see if we can bring in some of the minor characters and see what happens. So thank you.
I've always been curious about that because this space is incredibly fascinating. The first time I heard that, I thought this can't be true. But invariably, whenever I talk to an experiencer or a practitioner like you, even though the details might vary a little bit, the mechanics are almost identical. You go there, you get a life review, which is not someone judging you. You're basically judging yourself as if someone is asking, how do you think you did? Right. You take on a role and it's like casting a play. It might be a Shakespearean tragedy. It might not. And it's for the good and the learning of everyone in the group, not just you. It's almost identical every time I hear someone try to explain what it's actually like to be in the in-between space. So when you first discovered this, how much different was it from a past life experience, or are they very similar? How different was the life between live space?
Oh, the life in between. Oh, okay, then the life itself. How different was it? You're in a completely different space, obviously. When you're experiencing the past life, you're in it. You're feeling the emotions. You are there. You're not seeing anything beyond it. You're bringing yourself right back into that space. So it's completely different because usually once we get into the in-between space, all the drama kind of falls away. You're less stressed and you can see things a little more objectively.
So that's the difference. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Can you tell us about some of your experiences or your clients' experiences in that space?
In the past life arena, we've had quite a few interesting ones. So I guess for myself, the example I used with the judgment piece was one of my past lives where I was wrongfully accused by my friends, who I thought were my friends, and I was hanged for something. So judgment was definitely something that I have come a long way on. And in the importance of non-judgment, because it's important. We're all going through something different for our soul learning. The importance of non-judgment is pretty huge. I've had some past lives where I was a Native American. Two specifically. One, it was very interesting. All I needed to know from that lifetime was that me and my sister in that lifetime were just joyous and lovely, and we wound up growing old together. But that sister in that lifetime is now a very dear friend of mine here, which is lovely.
I was just about to ask you that. What is it like if you recognize someone in this life that you've shared lives with before?
Oh, it's like you meet this person and all of a sudden everything clicks. Why do I get along so well with this person? I just met her for 20 minutes and we know each other's life story. It's a connection that doesn't fade, I don't think. But I also believe it is true for what role she was planning to play in this lifetime, right? So maybe she was here, we're both here to support each other. But say I had a friend or somebody else in a lifetime and this time they decided, hey, we're going to be that mean person. We're going to marry you and treat you meanly and have you go through a divorce, you know? So I don't think it's always our best friend in one lifetime is going to carry through that way to the next. I think we all switch it up to play different roles.
It's like in the movies. Sometimes you're the good guy and sometimes you're not.
Yeah, I agree.
Great. So experiences in the in-between space for some of your clients, anything that comes up that was really, really interesting and had an impact on them as well afterwards?
I guess those two I could go into. One of the women who had a very, very strong reaction to her past life. And her past life was that she was a Jewish child in World War II. And she saw herself, we got to the point where she was in a mass grave. She hadn't died yet, but she was in a mass grave. And one of her emotions was, I don't understand, I did everything right. I said all my prayers, I did all the rituals, we were good people, all that kind of stuff. So it was very traumatic for her. When we got out of it, we actually didn't even get to this in-between lives, but it helped her understand some of the issues she had with religion and spirituality in this lifetime. I know that seems pretty even keel, but it was very deep and very profound for her. And just as we can have very deep and very profound experiences, there is another woman who wanted to experience past life regressions. She was a little skeptical and she was like, I'm not sure I want to do this. So we said, okay, why don't we set the intention that our first past life regression therapy session with you is going to be pretty benign. It's going to be a life and death so that you feel comfortable with it. And we did. She was dying in bed in this lifetime, and she could feel that she was dying. She said, I could even smell the smell of decay a little bit before she was dying. And she said she wasn't afraid. She was totally accepting of that death. And that touched her in such a way that we did more past life regression therapy sessions with her, but it also changed how she viewed her own death in this lifetime. I thought that was kind of fascinating.
That does give people comfort. That
Absolutely.
They've been through it before, which means they're going to go through it again, which means
again.
The obvious conclusion is it doesn't just end right here.
Exactly. Exactly.
I've never asked anyone this question before, a practitioner, that is. But do you think some people take offense to the idea of reincarnation and past lives because once they die, they just want to be done? They don't want to be conscious?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. That's part of it. And I think some people believe whatever their religion believes, and they don't want to go against that for whatever fears they have around that. But yes, absolutely. Some people are like, why would I want to come back? Why would I want to come back? Heck, I have a client of mine who totally believes in past life regression therapy sessions, and she goes, I hope I don't come back after this one. I think I could be done.
It's probably pretty common, but in your sessions, as we're laughing, is it common for you to walk your clients through a death at the end of every life?
That is our goal. And most of the time we do get there, but some of the time we don't. And that's fine.
How often do you go from there, from one past life? What's the trigger to go into the in-between space?
It usually flows very nicely if the client is willing to go that part. Sometimes we get to the place where, okay, what did I need to learn in that lifetime? And they're good. They don't want to know anymore. But I'm finding a lot of people want to know what was the plan? Why do we do it this way? Why did she have to come and do this? Why did he have to come and do this? The way I see it is that once we leave this life, we kind of go up into this little area where we meet our guides and everything. And then we go a little further up to say, okay, how did we plan on this? What's the big orchestration going on?
So it sounds like you've been doing this for a while. What do we have to do to keep from coming back here? When I say keep from coming back, I'm not saying consciousness ends. I'm saying we ascend. We go towards the light or become more like light beings so we don't have to reincarnate anymore. Do you have any insight into?
I have to say, I'm still figuring that one out. I would love to know. If you find anything out, please, please let me know.
Thanks, but I don't have the spiritual authority. I'm just a messenger. That's all I can tell anyone. But I will definitely keep that in mind. So at the beginning of the episode, you did mention something about 3D. When you talk about 3D, the inevitable discussion is about 3D to 4D and 5D and beyond. What is this journey, this path that you're on, what have you learned about ascension or going to the light or how we're supposed to raise our vibe? Or is that even relevant to your path?
Raising the vibration is definitely relevant to the path. And I think that's relevant to most folks who are on this path. To raise the vibration for a number of things. One, to raise the vibration of ourselves, then also raises the vibration for everyone around us. I believe that we can live our joy, but there is a lot of contention around how we do that or why we would want to do that or do we have the time to do that. So If we were to talk about dimensions, I think I get too mentally engrossed in the differences between the dimensions that I think it takes away some of the purpose, I guess. So my focus has been more about, okay, how can I raise my vibration? Especially if you're feeling low, how do you bring it up? If you're already feeling high, how do you bring it even higher? Because to me, I believe that's the evolution of humanity, is to bring that vibration up as high as we can. Because if we all are vibrating at a higher rate, then life on Earth has to get better. We start living from the heart. We start treating each other better. We start having these experiences with what we call supernatural all the time. I believe that's part of who we are. And it's just that where we live and the vibration that we're at keeps us from these experiences on an ongoing basis, like on a very regular basis.
What you just mentioned reminds me something about what many mediums do and other intuitives do say. Typically, it'll be something like, this isn't a gift, everyone has it. It's a little closer to the surface in some than others. Is it possible that we were once a very advanced civilization, thousands and thousands of years ago, where we lived in a fifth dimension type civilization where telepathy was common? Did you get a glimpse of any of that in any of your past life experiences or that of your clients?
I have had, so I agree. I believe that we have had on some timeline on Earth that we were all already 5D, and something happened where we weren't. We fell to a lower vibration for whatever reasons. It could be for a learning portion of humanity. It could be for its mistakes that we've made. I've had a past life where I supposedly was on Atlantis and was right before things started going really bad. I just remember being in a stone temple, and that for me, what I needed to get out of that lifetime was that stones can be healing and how to use them and draw some of that information in. I had a client come in too for a past life regression, and I don't know if we ever determined which civilization it was from, whether it was from Atlantis, Lemuria, or something like that, but he drew something from that lifetime and pulled it into this lifetime for some work that he was doing with lasers and trajectories and things like that. He was an engineer. It was really fascinating. Wow. I was so excited. He was stoked when he left. He's like, this is fascinating.
That's so cool. And you mentioned Lemuria, yeah, which I think, as far as I've been told, is supposed to be even older than Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a visual memory of that, or is it just kind of like a dream that you had a long time ago? Do you remember what things looked like?
I do not. I just remember the feeling in that temple and how sacred it was and how normalized our abilities were. Looking outside in, it was like, oh my gosh, we could do this. And then just being okay with all the crystals and stones and how we worked with those.
How long ago do you suppose that was? I know you can't pinpoint a year, but a lot of people are curious.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't usually ask timelines, although I will say I had a past life regression therapy session with a history teacher once.
Really?
And she spent a lot of time saying, wait a minute, what we're wearing doesn't match that. So she started like bringing her mental mind into it. I'm like, wait a minute, let's do that afterwards. Let's get to the core part of your emotions here, you know? So I usually stay away from, unless it comes up, but I normally focus more on the emotional aspects. And when I do past life regression therapy sessions, my goal is to help people eliminate or understand so that they can start to eliminate something that is keeping them or hindering them in this lifetime. So a lot of times you'll go to some meditations and say, oh, let's just go to a past lifetime and see what it was like. For me, I make sure that we have some sort of pointed purpose. Okay, what do we need to let go of so you can feel freer, happier, and live life more fully?
So it seems like this type of work can definitely have some therapeutic benefits.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And it can be quite deep for some people, and it can just be quite fascinating for others. Because everything is in our cellular memories, and we just need to access it if we want to get past certain things that we've carried on for whether lifetimes or even just into one lifetime.
What kind of advice do you have for someone who could be listening right now and they'd like to be able to connect with their past loved ones? What are the dangers or what words of caution would you give them if they are interested in doing that?
That's a very good question, because there's a lot of information out there. There are a lot of people out there who could help guide you, but really follow your heart on what methods you want to use, what people you want to connect with. There are a lot of safety protocols that I've put into place from day one, and I teach a class with a specific technique on how to connect with past loved ones. And there's a whole setup you do to make sure that what you're bringing in is of the light and that you're comfortable with it. As soon as you're not comfortable with it, it's time to let it go. It's just time to stop the session or change your space. I'll give an example. Earlier on, when I first started doing Reiki, I'd say within the first 5 years of doing Reiki, I was giving a woman a session. And it was interesting. I saw this figure walk in the door and sit down on the couch that was right next to the table. And it was a black energy. And my mental body saying, something's off, you got to get rid of this. But the energy was so calm and just sitting there doing no harm. So about 5 or 10 minutes, I sat there and I guess my mind got the better of me. And I said, listen, you need to leave. I'm very uncomfortable with you here. So the being got up and left. I did a meditation afterwards. I said, okay, what was that about? Who was that person? And that person was a friend of the person I was working on the table. And he wanted to come through because he saw the energy, he felt the light, and he wanted to know what we were doing because he thought it could help him. So from then on, I never judged a being by the color of their energy. In fact, with certain clients, I'll invite folks who are not as light to come in if they can learn from what we're doing or be healed also by what we're doing. I'll invite them in, of course, a little off to the side so they're not in our space because I feel like we can uplift those folks as well. So it's really important to not judge a book by its cover, because there are also some light beings who come through. You think they're light, and then you look past the light, and they're not so light. So there's a whole thing of, I don't like to use the word protection, but it is. You put an intention up there that you are safe and secure, and nothing but love and light are going to come through. So yes, I think it's very important. It's a good question to ask, especially for folks beginning, yeah.
Anything else you can share about safety protocols? Because I'm sure there are a lot of curious folks out there, and I've heard quite a few cautionary tales saying this is not for amateurs. And you have to know what you're doing, and protection is very, very important.
It is. It is. There's lots of ways you can do that. You can bring in light. You can say a prayer. You can ask angels for help. There are crystals that can assist too. I think you don't always need to have an actual crystal with you. You can ask for the energy of the crystal to be with you. There's music, there's sage, there's tons of things that you can do. I actually wrote a book during the pandemic because I could see with all the contention going on and the controversy, there was so much anger and so much emotion that I wrote a book called The Daily Cloak. It's an energetic guide for clearing and protecting, so you keep yourself clear so you're not absorbing other people's stuff. And then you're also protecting yourself. So once you clear, you keep your space sacred. You have to do that on a regular basis. So there's other books out there, other websites and things like that that can help out with that too. But there's tons of ways you can do that.
That information can't get out there quickly enough because mm-hmm. I have a feeling that a lot of people are getting involved with things that they have no idea what they're fooling around with. So Pamela, thanks so much for joining us. How can our listeners find out more about you online?
You can find me on my website, which is Pamela Aloia, that's PamelaAloia.com. I'm also on Facebook as Pamela Aloia Author and on LinkedIn as the same Pamela Aloia Author.
Excellent. I'll put that link in the show notes and the transcript as well. You've been listening to Closer to Venus. I'm Johnny Burke. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing. You can also find more information and episodes on closertovenus.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.